You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Friday. Welcome in to the last regular season version of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And today, we're doing it. We're concluding the regular season by talking Hawks. We're going to look back at the team's record and them exceeding their over-under, which is fantastic. And then to shift sort of into playoff mode, we'll talk about the playoff schedule, get you ready for Pacers-Celtics. And then every pod the rest of the way about games will be playoff-related. All the discussion will be playoff-related. It's going to be awesome, awesome, awesome. But we got to get through one more game. We got to talk about that Hawks game. And I think I was worried about this game being boring, but it's fun. It was very fun. They won on a faux buzzer beater with Edmund Sumner hitting three free throws at the end of the game to seal the win and hit the over, which is fantastic. But I wanted to open with like a movie voice kind of guy to do this. So I'm going to try this and it's going to be hilarious or awful. In a world where Doug McDermott leads the team in minutes. Or I can do it a different way. In a world where Doug McDermott is the best front court player available. I can't believe that was real for the Pacers. Doug McDermott was actually their best available front court player. And he played 31 minutes. I think that's a season high for him. Actually, Leaf played more minutes than him. Oops, I got that wrong. But he played a ton of minutes, and he was their best available guy in the front court. They had a lot of their guards, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Tyreke Evans, all played to get into a rhythm. But I thought it was funny that McDermott played that much. Oh my gosh, I just checked my audacity and saw how loud that that fake movie voice ended up being. Anywho, Collison, I'm going to start with the guys who are actually going to play in the playoffs. So Collison, Joseph, and Evans will all be playing in the playoffs in the rotation. Darren Collison only played the first half. He played in this game to get his feet back under him after missing three games with an injury. And he struggled in that first game back against the Nets this time. A little bit better, mostly just limited. Only took three shots, but he was more of a distributor, had four assists in only 16 minutes. So in his normal workload, that's eight or nine assists, which is a quality passing game for him. He did not play the whole second half. I will say he looked more comfortable. I might have said that yesterday too, which is good for him just to see him back out there getting ready to go. I think he is crucial for the offense of the series, so glad to see that. Corey Joseph, similar, just looked good, looked ready to go. His shot wasn't falling, but he did all his other stuff. Trae Young struggled. And then Tyreke was the big story. 27 points on only 14 shots. 5 of 8 from 3, looked to be in a big rhythm. I've heard he's really excited for the playoffs, actually. The only other time he's been there was with a Pelicans team that I think was the 8 seed and got swept and had no chance. I think this is his first opportunity to be on a team that's potentially competitive in the playoffs. If he can get rolling like this, the Pacers are going to be very hard to beat because, I mean, they won with the Mad Ants and him in this game, basically, because he was that good in his time on the floor. And the guys he played with, you know, Quinn wasn't very good. He actually fouled out after clubbing Trae Young in the face by complete accident, but he finished with 6 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists in 10 minutes. Leaf was good on O, not good on D. McDermott was the same way. And then when Sumner came in and they made that lineup go small with Leaf at center and McDermott at the four, you know, Tyreke was booing that group, but Sumner was good on D, not good on O. He was the opposite of those guys. So he did a good job keeping that group afloat because they would have been a drastic minus against the Hawks starters. Leaf, though, is another guy worth discussing. Leaf will probably be the best guy not playing in the postseason, him or O'Quinn, depending on, well, or how. There's a lot of ways you can check this out. Anywho, Leaf is probably the highest guy in the rotation who won't be playing in the playoffs, probably not the best. He finished with his best career game by a mile. His first double-double, 28 points and 10 rebounds on just 19 shots. He took two threes and missed them both, but a lot of his damage was done on the inside, and he's really, really refined his post game. You know, he had a few nice takes to the rim. He had a few nice moves on John Collins and Alex Len. And even Deonta Davis at one point, I remember, was in on him. Deonta Davis only played 3 minutes, which made me sad. I was a big fan of him coming out of Michigan State. But Leaf looked quality. He's getting his hands in the way of shots more than I remember with him. He blocked a Trae Young shot and another one. I can't remember who the other block was on. But he seems to be more adept with his on-ball D. His off-ball D is still incredibly weak. an incredibly weak part of his game. But he's getting there. Big to see him play 34 minutes in a start and actually be productive and a useful player. And then McDermott, who I said was the best player of the front court guys. 13 points on 12 shots. He hit two threes, but really didn't do much else. He was just kind of out there spacing the floor. He took a lot of twos, actually. He took 9 2-point attempts, but wasn't getting him to go. Only hit two of them, so... He played a lot of minutes. He played 31 minutes because without Bojan, he was literally the only wing available. Sumner played some three. Davon Reed played some three. We'll talk about all those fun guys in a second. But yeah, McDermott, not a shining performance as we go into the playoffs. Also, I saw a tweet. I wish I remember who it was by, but it made me laugh. It said, thank God we're on the road for the series against Boston because now we'll get road McDermott, which is a great point. How did we miss that? Now that'll help a lot in the series. So the G Leaguers now. I guess Holiday's in the rotation. We'll do Holiday before the G Leaguers. Holiday was okay. He was fine. 13 points. Did a nice job, you know, getting to the basket and taking guys off the dribble, but didn't show a lot of anything else in this game that made me super psyched about his performance. He just played. The G Leaguers. I don't get to talk about these guys a lot, so I'm very excited. Alize Johnson, Edmund Sumner, and Devon Reed all played 22-plus minutes. Devon Reed's all came in the second half. He played almost the entire second half. He came out starting in the second half with Collison done for the day and the season. And he was fine, I guess. it was just fun to watch him be out there taking shots. He took 8 shots, which is more than he had the entire rest of the season. He hit a 3. He had 4 rebounds. He looked okay on defense. It was exciting to see him actually on the court for once, considering he rarely got that opportunity this year. And he looked, you know, I don't know what the deal with him is going to be after going from full contract with the Suns to two-way with the Pacers. But he showed us some stuff in this game that maybe another team will give him a two-way or like a contract to be a bench guy with some potential. Sumner, who I love his potential, he was bombing away from three. He hit 3 of them. He took 14 shots on his way to 22 points. But really what made Sumner's game so impressive is he was getting to the line whenever he wanted. Took 11 free throws in this game, which is very impressive, including the 3 that won them the game right at the end. His defense was quality on whoever he ended up guarding, except on Torian Prince, who hit a 3 to give the Hawks lead with about 2 seconds to go. He did okay when he was matched up with Herter and occasionally on Justin Anderson and Bazemore. He did all right. It's cool to see Sumner in his element. He looks so much smoother when given big time and had a chance to, you know, get settled into the game instead of saying, hey, you know, you haven't played very much, go guard Klay Thompson. This was a much better situation for him, and he did a pretty good job. 22 points, season high. And then Alize, everybody's favorite. Start Alize, start Elise, however you want to say it. That's 2 in a row, Ethan. It's 2 shows in a row. He got 25 minutes, 7 points. I believe all of his makes were putbacks, which was funny. He is so explosive on the glass. He had 11 rebounds, team high, 3 offensive rebounds. Him and Leaf combined for 8 offensive rebounds. He was a team high plus 14, too. His energy carries over to everybody. Getting the ball in the Pacers' hands was a big deal. He was just ripping rebounds over whoever was on him. He looked like the effort guy they had in the G League. And he took a long 2. I mean, I think he meant for it to be a 3. It was a long 2, and he missed it. But he shot the ball, like, not terribly in the G League, so I wanted to see him shoot a jumper, and he missed it. But all in all, it was really fun to see all those guys have okay performances. You know, Sumner doing stuff off the dribble he hasn't done all year, shooting threes. Reed just being on the floor was exciting. Alize doing this, all the good stuff he did in the G League. It was a blast. This whole game was so much fun just to see guys you rarely ever see on the floor. You know, TJ Leaf was playing center a lot. They had a guard playing the 3, McDermott at the 4 a bunch. It was just a riot. And they won, which is great because that pushed them to win number 48, the same win total as last year, and over their over-under. So let's just talk about their record a little bit and the context of the season after this break. So it's official, 48-34, your Indiana Pacers for the second year in a row. I have not actually verified this myself, although I have no reason not to trust him. Pat Boylan from the team tweeted out that is the 10th best record in franchise history, which considering it's the same record as last year means it is tied for the 10th best record in franchise history, which since they, 1967, right, they became an NBA team. I might be wrong there. But something around then, given that they have about a 50-year history now. Yeah, that's right, 67. Yes, okay, good. 52-year history now. To have one of your, you know, top 20% seasons is always good. Your best one of your best five seasons if you break it out that way. But then if you break it out into context, it's even more impressive. You know, I don't think any of the you know, Reggie Miller gets hurt for over half the season. Any of those teams are going to be nearly as good. Or Paul George, you know, he missed a whole year. They didn't even make the playoffs. Danny Granger, we know what happened when he got hurt. They did not certainly have one of the best 10 seasons in franchise history, et cetera, et cetera. You get the gist of what I'm saying here. Given that Vic missed over half the season, 46 games, the fact that this team was able to get to 48 wins, to get to one of the better seasons in franchise history, to me, is super impressive. And a lot of the predictions for them before the year were about the same seed level, maybe at like 50 wins. But when Vic played, they were a 57-win team. And a 57-win team in terms of pace of their record. So they were good. They were legitimately good. They just got a tough injury bug. And they didn't even do that much in the summer besides side Tyreek and O'Quinn and like some fringe guys like McDermott too. You know, all those guys ended up being on the edge of the rotation. And yet they helped a lot. You know, their improvements over Stevenson and Wilkins and Al Jefferson. So that's the way that the team was supposed to improve, by two wins. But the way they really improved was their internal development. Aaron Holiday turned out to develop to be better than Joe Young when they needed a guy in a pinch. Sabonis developed into a franchise record-holding shooter. One of the craziest things ever, 59% shooting for Sabonis is a franchise record. Had he missed one more shot than he did, he would not have had the record, and it still would be in the hands of Mahinmi. But still impressive for Sabonis and his development. Turner went from a pretty good defensive player to probably the third best defensive center in the NBA and a top five defender overall in the NBA. You know, all that stuff matters a lot in terms of the team's improvement. TJ Leaf became terrible to useful, however you want to define that level of useful. Bojan especially had the big development. He went from mostly a shooter with a little off the bounce game to a full blown can create for himself kind of guy. All those developments made the team just completely outshine what anyone thought they could do. And then Vic's injury kind of reset that, but Vegas pins him before the year at 47.5 for their over-under. Me and Adam both picked 48, assuming a fully healthy squad, so we're idiots. But still, the fact that they were able to hit the over with Vic playing less than half the season is really a testament, once again, to the development staff that this team has. Every year, it seems like guys get better and better. And pretty much every guy outside of maybe Darren Collison in the rotation from last year to this year got better in some key areas. Corey Joseph's defense once again got a little better. His shooting from outside before this March run was much better than last year. Just everybody just gets a tick better at the stuff they're good at. It's really how the Pacers operate in that way. It's fantastic to see, and it led them to another great season. 48 wins is something to hang your hat on, especially when your star misses over half the year. I'm impressed with that final result. If you've told me before the year Vic missed 46 games, I would have pinned them as maybe a 500 basketball team. So full credit to them. They had a great year. And without Marcus Smart, they could possibly carry that, roll that success into the playoffs, which would be great. Speaking of the playoffs, I am killing the transitions today. Speaking of the playoffs, Celtics playoff time coming up. The schedule's released, and I am going to talk about it, and then we'll get out of here. So a short one to end the year. Let's talk about the playoff schedule after the break. So the Smart injury is going to be a part of this segment too, because it should be. That is a huge deal. Huge, huge, huge. Marcus Smart, oblique injury, I think. He will miss at least the first two rounds of the playoffs, is my official prediction, if they make it out of the first round. My take, and people who are Celtics people's take, is you have Kyrie in your most important player slot. You have Al Horford, number two, and then Marcus Smart's probably number three for them. That's a huge deal for this Celtics team. They can replace his minutes with good players like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Gordon Hayward. We'll probably all see an uptick in what the plan was for playoff minutes and play more. And good Gordon Hayward playing more is certainly a good thing. But Jaylen Brown, for all the how good he's been on offense this year, he's just not Marcus Smart on D. And more Tatum, yeah, he'll be tireder. He'll be more tired. Who knows how much his Kobe shot profile will carry over to tired minutes, although he was fantastic in the playoffs last year. I'm just guessing anecdotes. They could all be great filling in these minutes, but they don't have the elite defensive player that they have with Smart, and that's a big deal. That'll let Bojan get free. If he can hit more shots, that's more 5-on-5 instead of transition. You know, all that stuff just stacks up. Smart does actually improve the Celtics' offense when he's on the floor. I was checking their on-off numbers out earlier. Their defense is close to the same. It's actually a little worse with Smart on the floor. I'm not really sure what that is. Maybe he just shares the floor with like Rozier or a lot or something like that. But yeah, it's a crucial thing for them to be missing. And it's a huge boon for the Pacers, who obviously have a bigger injury on their own end. But to get this, you know, they expected to have to play Smart, and now they don't have to. That's huge. That's huge for the Pacers, who will open the playoffs on Sunday in Boston at 1 o'clock. Not thrilled about the 1 o'clock. Am thrilled about the Sunday. That's exciting. That game is on TNT. Also, Pacers don't get any NBA TV games for the playoffs, which is a first. I'm surprised that it's the Denver Spurs series. I thought it was going to be Raptors Magic, but that's not important. Then they play two-day break, which is huge. Before game two, you know, gather your bearings, rest, get the film in. That's big. Then they play Wednesday at 7, also on TNT. Then they come back to Indy for the next two games. So Friday, April 19th at 8:30. So the late one on that Friday game. And then Sunday at 1 on Easter is game four in Indy. Game three is going to be the one with the shirts. I think it's gold is in the slogan. I can't honestly remember it. Both of the Indy games are on ABC. I was talking to Jeremiah Johnson to get TV stuff, though. Don't worry. Game three, at least, ABC does not have exclusive rights or something like that. So that means that we will still have the wonderful Fox Sports Indiana crew for that game. Game four, unfortunately, we will not. Maybe ABC paid a bunch of money guessing the sweep. And then game five is the following Wednesday after that Sunday, so another big break. And then Friday, Sunday. So always Wednesday, Friday, Sunday every time for this series. If it gets to Game 7 in Boston, that'll be on April 28th, so near the end of the month. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a long one because of all the two-day breaks, which actually makes me excited. And they will play the winner. Now, I don't know if we ever talked about the official bracket yesterday. They'll play the winner if they win of Bucks-Pistons. And with Blake Griffin banged up and Giannis being the MVP, I have to imagine the Bucks handily win that series. And they almost upset the Celtics last year. So clearly they have what it takes to be good in the playoffs now that they're a better team as well. I'm looking forward to that. For those that don't know or don't really keep up with this, it's Bucks-Pistons in the 1-8. It is Raptors-Magic in the 2-7. And Sixers Nets in the 3-6, which will be fun. The West turned out to be perfect for like the Nuggets, and we might see Rockets and Warriors round two, which will be fantastic. But yeah, that's the Pacers schedule against the no Marcus Smart Celtics. Should be awesome. I'm looking forward to the playoffs. And now officially Locked On Pacers will switch to playoff mode. All of our content will be dedicated to the Celtics series and, you know, adjustments, game recaps, all that good stuff. We'll have Celtics guests on as often as we can. Thank you guys for following along this regular season. It's been an absolute blast making these shows for you guys and interacting with you. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers and me on Twitter at TEastNBA. Make sure to listen to us on, rate us on iTunes if. Please give us honest ratings so we can get better. We want to make the show as good as we possibly can. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.